This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Good morning. You're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, the shipping special. Don't tell us we don't know how to have fun. The theme of the show this morning has been putting things on boats and selling them to other people, whether that is oil, whether that is chocolate-covered dates, whether that is steel rebar. We've had a number of reports out this morning looking at the different ways that this is happening. One came from the DMCC. They're seeing supply chains get shorter and a lot more friendshoring and nearshoring. One of those came from Etihad Credit Insurance. Their annual report showed that they had seen a 25% spike in the amount of policies that they wrote in 2023 compared to 2022. And we've also had a report from the FT that Rich was reading this weekend, suggesting that we're seeing shipping rates go up because of issues in the Red Sea and the Suez Canal. Well, we've been speaking to the CEO of Etihad Credit Insurance, Raja Al-Mazrui, to find out why they're writing more policies and where they're seeing that growth coming from. More from her on the show this morning. Meanwhile, we've had a man who disagrees with the fact that shipping rates are going up because of the Red Sea and Suez Canal issues. He thinks it's something else. He is Matt Stanley from Kepler. He's been talking to us about that and the recent drop in oil prices. A lot of whys and theories from Matt on this podcast. And we've been looking as well, for something completely different, at the Finance Bro Song of the Summer, when something from TikTok goes viral and it mentions hedge funds. All that on the Business Breakfast Bite-Size podcast this morning.
Rock the boat.
Don't rock the boat, baby.
Rock the boat.
Don't tip the boat over.
Rock the boat.
Don't rock the boat, baby.
Rock the boat.
Well, huge focus this morning on putting things on boats and making money from it. We are looking at it from a number of gangways this morning. We have been looking at the rise in insurance policies being written for exporters out of the UAE. Non-oil up 25% 2023 on 2022. Those are the numbers that have come out from the annual report from the Etihad Credit Insurance Company. We are also looking this morning on whether or not those supply chains are getting shorter. The DMCC thinks that it is, that we're doing a lot more stuff regionally rather than globally. We are going to be speaking to one of their C-suite executives in about the next 20 minutes. And we've been looking at a spike in shipping rates because of the Red Sea and Suez Canal bottlenecks. Well, maybe because of the Red Sea and Suez Canal bottlenecks, because one of our guests this morning had a different theory. There's an awful lot going on, Rich.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So a story in the FT this weekend, shipping rates seeing a second spike, they say because of Red Sea and Suez Canal bottlenecks. It said companies are booking containers early for the Christmas retail spike, with the Asia-Europe rate three times what it was a year ago. They say a 40-foot container, Far East and Northern Europe, currently going for $4,343. That's about three times what it was this time last year. Let's get the thoughts of Dan Richard, senior economist, Emirates NBD.
We have seen firms in Saudi Arabia and the UAE report higher input costs in the PMI surveys really since October last year. But so far, they haven't really passed this on to their customers through higher selling prices, seemingly choosing instead to absorb at least some of these costs in their margins. Now, for the GCC, given the dollar peg, some of the higher shipping costs may be offset by the strong dollar that we've seen in recent months, and so the lower dollar cost of goods imported from Asia in particular. If we look at the yen, that's depreciated by more than 10% against the dollar this year. And there's also been some more modest depreciation in the renminbi and the euro as well. Some sectors will be more affected by these higher freight costs than others, but firms will likely look to minimise the impact on consumers as the market environment remains very competitive, and they would not want to lose market share through raising prices, especially when competitors are not. In Egypt, there has been the additional factor of currency weakness, which is arguably the main driver of higher input costs for firms there, rather than shipping charges. And we think that these pressures have now peaked.
That is Dan Richards of Emirates NBD. But as you mentioned, Matt Stanley was in the studio with a slightly different take on it. Now, he works with Kepler, the data and information company. He's head of market engagement for more than half the world, Europe, Middle East, Africa and Asia Pacific. So he does have that global perspective. He said it's not so much the Red Sea and Suez Was it his theory? Was it? It's more like COVID when the boxes are just in the wrong places. Was
boxes
that his thesis?
And people. This is Matt.
I disagree. I don't think it's anything to do with the Red Sea issues. That is, you know, we've seen that route and the patterns and the volume of traffic drop by about 40% over the last 3 months and stay there. It's to do with logistics. It's like going back to COVID times. Boxes are not in the right place and people are not in the right place to deliver them. What you've got is you've got, with additional longer routes, people are not in the right position. And then you've got an issue in the States, which only the States can really have, is that there's a big union dispute and lots of people are on strike. So people are worried about where boxes are going to be. And of course, you know, if there's not enough supply of something, demand goes up and the price goes up. So, yes, it's a factor, the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, to do with shipping, but it's not the overarching factor that's driving rates up to where they are now.
Matt Stanley of Kepler. Yes, and more on this morning, that interview coming up. Looking forward to it with Ferry Al-Ahmadi of DMCC in just 10 minutes' time. Can we briefly, Brandy, take a moment to talk about our favourite business story of the weekend?
Oh.
Because, yeah, we read the FT Weekend and it was great and, you know, all the economists and all the important stuff. The story on Bloomberg, and it is one of their most read, is about the Finance Bro song.
It is indeed. So this started on TikTok, a 19-second TikTok video made by a woman called Megan Boney. She's in the US. She posts under the handle Girl on Couch. She was making fun of her and her friends looking to meet someone but having quite exacting requirements, looking for a man in finance. This was her TikTok video.
I'm looking for a man in finance with trust fund. 6'5", blue eyes. Finance, trust fund. 6'5", blue eyes. I'm looking for a man. I'm looking for a man. I'm looking for it, looking for it, looking for it, looking for it. Finance, trust fund.
And a lot of people watched it, and then the internet did its thing. She got 2 million likes, and people started saying, do you know what, this should be put to music. This should be a thing. And so it was put to music, so it came to pass. A DJ who I'd never heard of called Loud Luxury has turned it into a bit of a banging club tune. It has had, oh my goodness, 300,000 streams, I think, on Spotify. It was played at a rave, thousands danced to it in New York, and it now sounds a little bit more like what they're starting to call the anthem of the summer, this.
Looking for a man in finance, trust fund. 6'5", no eyes. Finance, trust fund. 6'5", no eyes. Finance, trust fund. 6'5", no eyes. Man in finance, trust fund. 6'5", no eyes.
Although I'm not sure she needs a man in finance because she's now got a record deal.
She has indeed. Universal have signed her up. Don't know how far this one's going to go, but it's certainly got legs at the moment. I was looking at her TikTok account over the weekend. That her original's been viewed 60 million times already and counting.
Yeah, indeed. Universal Music have signed her up. A talent agency has signed her up. She's quit the day job. Making the most of a 19-second TikTok video. Gary Vee would be proud.
Gary Vee would be very proud indeed. Gary Vaynerchuk, who was in the studio last week, social media guru. If you missed that, don't worry. The full interview on our social media channels, LinkedIn and YouTube and others.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Aforementioned expert is Matt Stanley. He's head of market engagement with the data and information company Kepler for, I was going to say half the world, it's more than that. Take a deep breath. Europe, the Middle East, Africa, Asia Pacific. Morning, Matt.
Yeah, I'm tired. Morning, Rich.
Yeah. You must have a lot of air miles, but we're not talking about aviation. We're talking about shipping this morning because that's one of the big things you do. I'm going to get your thoughts on the big story in a second. First of all, Brandy Scott is DJ this morning and she has a playlist for you.
I am sailing. I am sailing home again.
There you go. My bit of Rod Stewart for you, 7:15 in the morning. It's a serious issue, though. We had the spike in shipping costs when the attacks in the Red Sea began late last year. Then they fell back, but they've spiked again. What's the story?
I spoke about this actually last week. I'm not saying I'm in front of the FT with these stories, not at all. But it was a metric that we looked at based on a group of container rates off the Statista website. So if you go back, before the issues happened in the Red Sea and the Bab el-Mandeb Strait the rate was about, or the index was around $1,500 a box, or a 40 equivalent unit, 40 foot container. It then spiked in November to around just under $4,000 a box. Then it's come off over the last 4 months as things have stabilized and, you know, carriers and owners have not gone through the Red Sea. They've gone through around the Cape of Good Hope. And that was much expected. Trade patterns were always going to change and owners were going to change with them at a higher cost, granted. But what's happened in the last 2 weeks, that's actually, that index has spiked higher than when the Bab el-Mandeb issues really started. And it came to a lot of people by surprise. I disagree. I don't think it's anything to do with the Red Sea issues. That is, you know, we've seen that route and the patterns and the volume of traffic drop by about 40% over the last 3 months and stay there. It's to do with logistics. It's like going back to COVID times. Boxes are not in the right place and people are not in the right place to deliver them. What you've got is you've got, with additional longer routes, people are not in the right position. And then you've got an issue in the States, which only the States can really have, is that there's a big union dispute and lots of people are on strike. So people are worried about where boxes are going to be. And of course, you know, if there's not enough supply of something, demand goes up and the price goes up. So, yes, it's a factor, the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, to do with shipping, but it's not the overarching factor that's driving rates up to where they are now.
In terms of the stuff that people want to shift, and the FT does say that Far East to Northern Europe route is one of the most sensitive at the moment. They quote Koenen Nagel saying, pre-booking shipments for the festive shopping period, Christmas, Thanksgiving, as early as April. Others stocking up on summer goods, such as outdoor furniture and barbecues. Do you agree with that?
I think that diligence certainly comes to play there. I don't think people want to get called out again. And people are looking back at mistakes they may have made over the last sort of 12 months and being proactive, looking at what should be a busy season, buying season coming up, say in Q3, Q4, when those guys really get the stuff on the shelves that they need to. I just think it's people looking at issues, maritime security issues that have caused a problem. And they're just trying to hedge their bets. They're just trying to make sure that there's got to be enough supply of something to ensure that they can meet the demand that's there.
What does that mean for us here, particularly Jebel Ali, but other container ports as well in this region?
Well, that's the question that I don't think a lot of people are asking. It's a really good question. Jebel Ali, the biggest port in the Middle East, the ninth biggest port in the world, owned and operated by DP World, continuing wanting to grow that port. It's a very efficient place to do business. We do a lot of business there. We've recently launched a container tracking platform, which is sort of moving the needle in terms of how we're aggregating data. And, you know, Jebel Ali has always been proactive and it always continued to will be. If you look at it from a practical point of view, though, container boats are not coming through the Red Sea. They're going via the Cape of Good Hope. So there was a 3-week lag. All of it contributes to higher prices for the end user. And this is why inflation on a global basis is sticky, especially in the US. And we obviously, as you know more better than me, we're in lockstep financially when it comes with the US. Jebel Ali are looking at, how routings will happen, people's planning on where boats need to be. Jebel Ali, the operators there, and the guys who are running a very efficient platform there, they're ahead of the curve. So I don't see it's going to be an issue for us at all.
Is there a sense or is there a danger that shipping companies could decide to bypass Jebel Ali? I'm just thinking about a container going from Singapore to Rotterdam. If it's got to go via the tip of Africa rather than through the Red Sea, do they just think, well, actually Jebel Ali is not on the way and therefore will cut out the Middle East entirely?
Well, certainly a lot of people have been thinking along the same lines as you, but essentially the way that these container lines operate is that they operate on a ferry. They go from one place to the other. It's not necessarily the most efficient way of getting to point A to point B. A container boat going from Rotterdam to Qingdao in China, for example, via Singapore, will have 12, 13 stops that it has to call at. Jebel Ali is effective like DXB is for airlines. It's the spoken wheel model for the wider Middle East region. So if you're an Iraqi buyer and you need products, which everyone does, you send a smaller container boat to go and pick some stuff up from Jebel Ali. That demand is still there. So the supply has to be there too. There are certain owners, it, just moving away from containers a second, the tanker owners are certainly not calling at Fujairah as they used to. Fujairah being the third or fourth biggest refueling hub for ships has seen, well, did see a sort of hit initially on demand for refueling there, but that's largely stabilised now. But no, look, I mean, the regional demand is still there, so the supply for containers and boxes has to be there too.
Let's talk about oil now. One of the other big stories that we're looking at this morning, falling to a three-month low in Friday's session. It's still since stabilised. Brent's around $82 a barrel this morning. But interesting comments from one of the brokers over the weekend that I was reading, talking about a relentless downtrend in oil. That's from PVM. They say that there are 6 million barrels per day of oversupply potentially in the market. OPEC Plus is artificially restricting that supply, but relentless downtrend, Matt?
Well, yeah, look, I mean, they're a previous competitor of mine, PVM, so the hyperbole they're putting around that I'm going to disagree with. but no, they're a very well-respected broker. I love you, PVM. But look, it's a seasonal thing, Rich. I mean, look, we're in maintenance season. The Chinese are not buying. Well, they have been restocking recently, but a lot of refineries are down for maintenance. It's that shoulder season for the Northern Hemisphere, apart from here where it's suddenly got extremely warm again. But in Europe and across that sort of latitudinal region of the world, lots of refineries are down for maintenance because demand isn't as high as it is for, say, power generation fuels. That will come back. Look, the 6 million barrels a day number, I think, can be perceived in a certain way. We see that as OPEC spare capacity, right, which they're keeping off the market right now. And I said to Brandy a few weeks ago, we don't see OPEC Plus bringing any oil back until at least Q1 next year, right? And the market is simply too fragile. On the 12th of April, Brent was at $92.50 a barrel. It's now $10 below that. What's been dragging down oil recently has been poor refining margins because demand has come in. It's been okay, but nowhere near as good as people thought. And to me, that's nothing short. Well, the only reason for that is because interest rates in the US will stay higher for longer, which has dampened demand. And a lot of people priced in that we would already see some interest rate cuts. We actually see between June and August.
10 seconds, Matt, final thoughts.
We see that there will be a supply deficit in the summer. And we see prices getting back up more towards $90 a barrel. I think nothing new there from OPEC, and they'll roll over the cuts.
Matt, great talk to you. Appreciate your time this morning. Thanks. The thoughts of Matt Stanley there, who is the market leader for half the world, Europe, Middle East, Africa, and Asia Pacific at the data and information company Kepler. Appreciate your time this morning, Matt.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Let's continue that theme of making money by sticking stuff on boats. We are going to speak now to one company that is helping businesses here in the UAE, particularly smaller businesses, make that happen. They are Etihad Credit Insurance. They have just seen the amount of policies that they wrote in 2023 rise by a quarter, 25%, compared to 2022. And 2022 was not, as you know, a shabby year for the non-oil sector here in the UAE. We are very pleased to be joined by Raja Al-Mazrui, who is the Chief Executive Officer for Etihad Credit Insurance. Raja, it's lovely to speak to you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Before we dig into your numbers, into your annual report, just remind us, for those who might not be as familiar with you, who you actually support with Export Credit.
Well, Etihad Credit Insurance is a federal company. Our mandate is really to protect international trade for UAE companies that are engaging in trade transactions outside the UAE. We support all kinds of companies, but we have a major interest and focus on supporting the SME sector in particular to enable them to access global international trade opportunities.
Okay, and when you say them, you support them, what exactly does that look like?
So we provide them with a lot of solutions that help them avoid risks that are related in international trade. If we look at geopolitical risks or risk of non-payment from international markets, we provide them insurance against all of these risks.
Okay, so let's look at your annual report. 25% increase in the number of policies from you 2023 compared to 2022. That's up a quarter. How come?
So we have really realigned our vision towards our national objectives, and the significant growth can be attributed to the strategic focus on enabling the SME sector to access international trade opportunities through creating a lot of awareness about export finance and trade credit solutions that protect international trade. And in addition to introducing them to the different products and services from ECI that help them mitigate the risks associated with those markets. In addition, we provide specialized risk mitigation solutions for exporters and buyers, because we look at the countries they're interested in, we look at the buyers that they're interested in, and we enable them to understand the amount of risk that's involved in those transactions. But in the same time, after creating that awareness, equip them with services to avoid these risks. In addition, we have strong partnership with various stakeholders all around the world that has been instrumental in driving our growth. The collaboration with leading financial institutions, government office entities, other ECAs around the world has enabled us to work in a collective of an international ecosystem that supports international trade. And finally, because we have developed a very specific technology tool that enables us to assess risks on the spot. It uses an AI technology to assess the risk of the buyers in the markets, as I mentioned, and also to explore the export potential for the companies that we're assessing within those markets.
Is the 25% rise in policies because there are more companies doing business? Out, you know, shipping outside of the UAE who are exporting, is it an increase in the number of companies or is it an increase in the number of deals? What can we take from this?
So there is definitely an increase in number of transactions. As a Minister of Foreign Trade has announced, the UAE for the first time reaches 3.5 trillion in foreign trade of products and services from the UAE. So with the increased volumes of trade, there comes increased demand for protecting those trade transactions, which reflects on an increase in the number of policies that we issue for UAE-based companies.
Right. But are you seeing more companies as well as more transactions? Are there just more people doing business out of here?
That's definitely true, and that's reflected in all the economic factors. But in the same time, I believe that also it's the awareness about the tools and that are available today. Because as any company wants to cross border, they will have a lot of risks to keep in mind. And once they know that they can mitigate those risks, even if they are trying to access a working capital to increase the facility, we work with them on securing their loans from the financial institutions that enable them to grow and export. So export opportunities are available. It's really the awareness about how to use the ecosystem to navigate all of the opportunities to maximize growth.
Well, you also helped them to collect overdue payments, in fact, 82 million dirhams worth last year. Are we seeing more defaults on payments to people, or is it just that more deals mean that as a percentage that's going to grow?
So basically, we serve the interest of our clients. And when we receive notifications about delays of payments, we take a proactive approach in reaching out to the buyers in those markets through our network of offices to avoid those become debts or claims. So we are very proactive in terms of collecting the delayed overdues. At the same time, we enable those companies to whatever claims are pending. But to answer your question, yes, with more trade, there will be definitely more risks and maybe more dues and claims. And that's what ECI provide today for any company in the UAE. We are a federal entity. We support all 7 Emirates and all types of businesses in all of their export markets. So with the trade credit insurance policies, they actually protect themselves against claims or delays in payments.
Okay, you say all companies. There'll be people listening who are thinking, I wonder if I actually qualify. What's the bar in terms of size, deal, credit worthiness? Who do you deal with? How do you choose?
So we look for companies that are established in the UAE, anywhere in the UAE, and they have at least 3 years financial statements that they can share with us. We need to understand also what type of markets they are interested in. We support 17 sectors except for oil and gas. So we are sustainable, and we encourage the diversification. So oil and gas related companies won't benefit from any of our services, but companies that are in construction or food technology, they are all eligible. So based in the UAE, minimum 3 years financial statement, and then also looking at the company's export business, because we're really focused on exporting. So if they do domestic work, that won't fit the mandate. But anyone who is either exporting right now or has potential to export.
Super quick, just 20 seconds. We've signed so many comprehensive economic partnership agreements in the last couple of years. Do you see more people shipping, selling to those countries? Is there a material shift towards them?
Absolutely, because these SEPA agreements has reduced the trade barriers between the UAE companies and the counterpart countries. And at ECI, we really work on our with our partners or our potential companies to understand the benefits of exporting to a SEPA country versus a non-SEPA country. And if you look at the amount of SEPA agreements that have been signed and the collective size of the market, it really creates a huge opportunity for UAE businesses to tap into.
Raja Almaz-Ruiz, Chief Executive Officer of Etihad Credit Insurance, speaking to us this morning. They've seen a 25% rise in the policies that they wrote in 2023.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Mark Archer, regular on Dubai Eye on our sports coverage, but also a sports business deal maker of some repute in this region. Morning, Mark.
Morning, Richard. Morning, Brandy. And yeah, nice to be sitting in for Tom, who I did see. He was headed to the airport on Sunday after doing extra time at the weekend. And obviously, we watched Manchester United paint Manchester red of that defeat in the FA Cup final of Manchester City. But yeah, good to be here.
It's good to have you here. And you're here not because of the FA Cup final, although I did watch it and enjoy it, not because of the IPL cricket final last night, even because of Al Wassel's victory in the UAE Pro League. You are here, and Brady Scott's DJ today, you are here because of this. That was the sound in the Garden City of the UAE on Saturday night as Al Ain scored a remarkable 5-1 victory over the Japanese side Yokohama to win the Asian Champions League. They now go into the Club World Cup up against, quite possibly, the likes of Real Madrid at the end of this year. Mark, how significant is this?
Well, it's amazing. And you just look at the results that got them to the final. They knocked over two of the big Saudi powerhouses. Al Nassr, of course, containing Cristiano Ronaldo. Al Hilal, one of the biggest teams, most successful teams in the Asian competition. And just the way they did about it, it's a two-legged final. So they went the first leg into to Japan. They trailed 2-1, had to come back to Al Ain on Saturday night, and 5-1, a big victory in a cup final, one-off win. Obviously, they went down to 10 men. Their goalkeeper sent off, I think, in the second half, which made it difficult for Yokohama Marinos. But 6-3 aggregate win for Al Ain, a massive evening to celebrate UAE football, and it's just a fantastic result. And you look at where they are; they're only third in the Pro League, you know. And they won this title, albeit in a different way, back in 2003. So an amazing result for Al Ain Football Club, and the Hazard Bin Zayed Stadium was absolutely rocking on Saturday night.
The scenes were incredible. And in fact, I remember on Friday, Serena Kelly, when she was doing the news, was talking about the directives that the police had issued to fans in Al Ain on Saturday night, because they know it. I mean, those fans are by far and away the most passionate fans in the UAE, I think it's fair to say. But lots of directives from the police about do's and don'ts for driving, because it was absolutely a party atmosphere. But we're the business breakfast, so let's talk about the business of sport. How on earth can any UAE team compete with the giants of the Saudi Pro League, given how much money they've thrown at football and the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo?
Yeah, it's a good question. We saw in the last 12 months the public investment fund privatise four of the big Saudi clubs and put a lot of money into there. And we've seen those clubs collectively recruit and bring in some big stars, haven't we? Some of the big names in European football, Cristiano Ronaldo, Karim Benzema, have all come into that league. And look, it's grown in profile. We now see it on BBC. If you want to see a result in Saudi, look on the BBC football results. They're all there. So it's about globalising that league. As we know in team sport, you just can't flick the switch and put a lot of money in and expect instant results. So whilst that league has been strengthened by these big name players, it does take a while to gel in and get better performances, I think, from those clubs. And Alain has been a team really without any real superstars. Big name coach in Hernan Crespo, the manager, who was a former Argentinian big name player in the 90s, big superstar from the national team and big star in Europe. But they've just, what Alain done have really exemplified how a team can come together and get a result and knock over some of those big clubs there. But yeah, massive investment in Saudi, particularly in football. We've seen it in a number of other sports, but that league has gone from strength to strength in terms of viewership, in terms of coverage, in terms of the profile of playing there. But as we've seen in sport, it doesn't necessarily transcend to results. So it will take a little while for those results to get there. Albeit seen, Al Nassr and Al Hilal were featuring in the final stages of that competition. So they're not far away.
The UAE blazed a trail in terms of using sport as a marketing tool 30 years ago when the Dubai Desert Classic kicked it all off. Since then, Dubai, the UAE led, Saudi Arabia now absolutely front and centre. Is the UAE in danger of getting left behind a little bit by the mega million Saudi Arabia is throwing at this? I mean, I'm just thinking last weekend we had the World Heavyweight Boxing title fight in Riyadh, didn't we?
Yeah, look, I think what Saudi are doing, it's incredibly new. The transformation there in society, part of, you know, Vision 2030, it's still quite fresh. It's all happened in the last couple of years. We've seen boxing, we've seen what's happening in football, we've seen the Formula One in Jeddah, we've seen a lot of this events happening there on a large scale. But as you say, UAE's mature. Dubai's been around with Desert Classic and the tennis and the Dubai World Cup's 25 years old. So Dubai's matured. UAE, within the whole UAE though, there's still big events happening. We still have Formula One, don't we? We still have big events happening in Abu Dhabi as well. So I think it's just a different stage of its life cycle. We've seen, you know, Qatar host a Football World Cup, you know, 18 months ago. So the region is still attracting big sport. Saudi Arabia is going to continue to invest. There's going to be more big sport there. With, you know, we talked about a World Cup being in Saudi Arabia in 2032. We know it's going to come. Their boxing's been headed there. Mixed martial arts has been massive in the kingdom as well. So the investment will continue. They will continue to get big events. And it's good for the region. I think the growth of Saudi Arabia has actually been beneficial also for the UAE, because a lot of people will come into the region. They'll come and spend time in Dubai. They'll spend time in hotels. They'll spend time in shopping malls, but they'll also then zip across to Saudi Arabia and witness some of these amazing events.
30 seconds left. Is there any sport we haven't tapped yet, any truly global sport? You know, we've got golf, tennis, football. These are global sports. Anything we haven't got yet?
Oh, what, in Dubai, in the region?
In the region.
That's a really good question. Olympic Games? A mega event?
You heard it here first. Mark Archer, sports deal maker. Olympic Games is coming to the Gulf. I'm paraphrasing. Mark, good to speak to you. So Mark's here this morning. Mark's on his way to the gym, but he's just spotted the carrot cake. Dilemma, Mark. Gym or carrot cake? Gym
well,
or carrot cake?
Definitely carrot cake, because I'm working off at the gym.
Good strategy.
Good on you, mate.
The breakfast of champions. Mark Archer there, joining us on the Business Breakfast.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.